Okay. So let's just test this. So right now it's not making much noise.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead and just say,
hello.
I am Farmian Ditta.
Hi, I am Farmian Susan Lee.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to turn it down a little bit. Okay, try that again.
Hi, I'm Farmian Susan Lee.
Perfect. Okay. So we're just testing right now.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to, I want you to tell me the story of your life.
Okay.
And so pretend like I'm a young person who wants to hear the story of your life.
Okay.
And I want you to not just tell me facts, but tell me a story.
Okay.
Try to make it as interesting as you can, and I'll lead you with some questions.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm still not hearing this very well.
You're not hearing?
That's a little better. That's a little better. Okay.
A little better?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit there.
Okay.
Better. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start with your childhood and tell me a little bit about where you're from and, you know, where you were born, about your parents and your sisters and brothers and the place where you grew up. Tell me a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born in Laos. We have six of us. So we have three boys and three girls. I'm the fifth youngest one. So I have younger sister. So I'm number five. And mom and dad. And my mom and dad are now, they live in France.
In France?
Yeah, they're not here. They live in France. So I have only one sister here with me. So the rest of my brother and sister live in France. So in Laos, I remember that I was really young, and then we always seems like a moving place to place. And
Why?
Because the communists. Every time when we move to certain place and then communists come, then we have to start moving again. I remember that I was maybe 3 years old and I was walking, escaping, and mom and dad carry things and, you know, blankets and food, and my brother and sister carry. I was walking once in a while. My dad put me in his shoulder when I cannot walk. And so after we moved to a place next to Thailand called Nam King, and we stayed there about 16 some years, then we have to move again. Then the last time we escaped is 1975 from Laos to Thailand in the camp.
Why did you leave at that point? Do you remember?
The communists come again, so they took over the whole country, so we cannot live there anymore. So we have to escape. If not, my dad was army. He was in the military. So if he doesn't escape, then if they capture him, they're going to put him in the concentration camp, or maybe he might get killed. And that time I was married. So my husband was in the army too. So we have to escape, you know, because otherwise, first time they'll be nice to you, but soon they got you and then they take you away, either you get killed or you in the camp for a long time and torture. If you can handle it, then you might be survived. If not, then you die. They don't give you no food and they make you work really hard. So we escaped 1975 to Thailand in the camp. We stayed in the camp 3 years.
What was the camp like?
Oh, it's just barbed wire across the camp. You know, you cannot go out. You stay in the camp. They give you like a food once a week, you know, and it's really little. So not much you can survive. If you bring some money from Laos, you might have some. You can go out. The people come from outside the camp. They just come to the camp where the gig is. sell some vegetables, some food, so you can buy some. Otherwise, you just have to eat what you have and just try to manage, so not to eat too much in one day, and the next day you don't have enough to eat. So,
at this point, did you have children?
No, I don't have no children. That time I just got married and I was really young. I was 16 years old. So we don't have no kid yet.
Now, at this point, some of your family went to France and some of your family went to the United States.
At the time when I was in Thailand, in the camp, nobody go anywhere yet. We all stayed in the camp. My family, my husband's family, everybody's in the camp. We all in the camp together.
But at some point, you...
Yeah, when 1977, and my brother went to France. Then after that, 78, I came to the U.S.
And why did you separate at that point?
I don't know, somehow my brother, somehow he wanted to go to France. I don't know why. When he went to France, and then I came over here, and when I get here, I tried to sponsor my mom and dad to come here, but somehow my other brother, older brother, he has said, four kids that time, they said that in France, when you have a lot of children, they can help you, they support you really good. So he heard somebody tell him that, send some cassette tape back to Laos and tell them how good it is in France. So, and then my other brother went to France. Then I have another brother live with my mom, and a younger sister live with my dad. So they all went to France after that. So I tried to sponsor them, but somehow they didn't want to follow their son, so they went to France. They didn't, in the Mian culture, they don't follow the girl, they only follow the son. So that's why they all went to France, and I ended up over here, and I sponsor my older sister. She was married, so I sponsor her. I tell her, I'm the only one here, why don't you come here and be with me? So finally, she came over here. She also got approved to go to France too, but at least she decided to come here, so. And I have one sister, but I have a lot of uncles in California.
Can you tell me a little bit about, let's go back a little bit, what it was like to live in the village near the Mekong?
Yeah.
What was it like to grow up there?
Oh, when we growing up that time, communists are kind of far away, not in there yet, in another part of country. So it was peaceful, don't have too much pressure, my dad is not really poor, but he's not rich, but kind of in the middle class. We have a village, and we also have the town that he has a convenience store. So he sells all the farmer's supplies and things like that. So he's in the little town, and we are in the village, in the farm. So we also have another house there. Mostly I live there with my other older brother. They're farming there, so I help them babysit the children, the kids, So it was peaceful, you don't have no too much electricity, you just have grow what you eat and just farm, you grow this year and you eat next year, and then you keep doing that. And there's no pressure, no compassion, no nothing. It's just like you live happy, everything's natural. Not too much chemical, so you grow what you eat. You want to eat chicken, you waste chicken with the farm, with the rice and corns, and you want to eat meat, you have to kill chickens, and things like that. And people go hunt and fish and stuff like that, so.
It sounds like a happy life.
It is happy life, we don't have pressure. Today, you might have everything, big house and cars and everything, but it's really stressful. It's just like a depression, it's just stress. Always try to get something. It's too many peer pressure, So I feel like this country is really good to us, the people in the U.S. They're very friendly, very open the heart for our refugee people to come here. I mean, it's an opportunity to come live in this country. And they are so nice and have a good heart for us to come to this country, and we have a lot to learn. And I'm just grateful for the U.S. government, you know, I mean, sponsor us and they ask to come to this country. But we have good lives here, but we still have like pressure, you know, like depressed, stress, and all these violent things going on. You hear all the news on TVs and stuff like that, you know. But in our country, we have no news, you know, no TV, no radios, nothing. So you pretty much see what hits you right there. Otherwise, you don't see anything ahead of you, or, you know, in the past, and, you know, what you have to prepare for the future. So you don't have all that things. You don't have all that thing. You're worrying about that. It's peaceful if a community doesn't come. I think even we live not rich, poorly, but we live peaceful life.
Here, as well as
in well as here, and as well as in Laos. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, we're going to be able to hear that.
Yeah.
Is that somebody that you could ask if they would not?
Yeah. Okay. So we can stop.
Should I turn it off for a minute?
Turn it off.
Okay.
And
let me do this. You know, if you hear it, just stop for a minute, and then we'll wait until they go.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay, let's have you try it again. Just say I
okay.
am.
Hello.
Okay.
You don't have your microphones on, but you might not be able to hear me.
I can hear you. I can tell that I have the microphone on because see these little dots here?
Okay.
They go up and down?
Yeah.
Every time you say something, it'll move.
Oh, okay.
See?
Yeah.
And I don't want it to go all the way up there. I want it to stay right about where it is. So it's perfect just as it is. Okay, now let's see. Mic is on. This is on. Let me make sure. Okay, give me a little bit more.
Hello.
Yeah, that's good.
Testing.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back a little bit to the refugee camp.
Okay.
And just tell me a little bit about what a day, what you did while you were there, and then how you learned that you were going to be coming to the United States, and how did you prepare to come here?
Oh, I think it was 1977, and the UNs go there, and then to ask people that when my husband was, HR was in the army, so they take those people first. They have more chance to come here, percentage wise. So then he applied for it, and then we both approved to come here in 1978. So we waiting to come. I want to come, but I'm so sad. I'm missing my family.
Where were they?
No, they were in Laos. No, in the camp. I have to leave my family behind, you know, and come here. So I come here with the HR that time, 1978, March 10th. So we left in we left.
Did you leave before your parents left?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So tell me a little bit about what you were doing in the camp. You worked there as a nurse.
Yeah.
Assistant?
Yeah. Actually, we have this little clinics in the camp. So, you know, we give like medicines and like a shot for protection, for flu shots or for different kind of. And then when people get sick, they go there, find medicine to take. And we give like a milk to the young kids, you know, like under 5 years old. Each week we give them a bag of those paper, like the powder meal, and we give them one soap, and we give them something else like a vitamin. And
where did these things come from?
From One Vision, from UN. Mm-hmm. Yeah, One Vision. Yeah, they give that to the camp. So every week we give to the kids, you know, so they can go home and wash themselves and, you know, get some nutrition and some baby foods. So I work in the clinic with my another friend there. And that time, HY was interpreter for this doctor from Australia.
We're waiting for the mower, just in case anybody's asking, waiting. Oh yeah, and they're paying him to do it, so there's no way he's going to stop.
Yeah.
Looks like a worker.
Yeah, this, yeah.
But now he's sleeping.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I worked there for maybe 2 years before when I came here.
Were there a lot of sick people there at the camps?
Yeah, no, they have some sick people, but not that many, you know. I mean, just like everyday things. But when we just escaped from Laos to the to Thailand, when we in this place that there's no camp, and the water was so terrible, and, you know, because every time when they ring, and then there's no toilet or anything like that, there's no outhouse, so we drink this water are really dirty. So that time people die a lot, almost every day you see people die because not enough food and the environment, living situation is really dirty. You know, so it just,
how long did you live in that situation?
In there for maybe, let me see, about 6 months. And then after they get this camp done, they call Cheung Kam Camp. So after they build these buildings and all that done, when we move to that another place, so this place is not too bad. They have they make the bathroom, you know, they make the outhouse, you know, dig out the ground really deep, and they also dig up a well, you know, so we have that. So it's like a more clean environment. And we live in the big buildings, you know, they build this big place, so we all live in the big buildings, so it's like a little bit nicer place to live. And then when we get there, people kind of, and then we also have a little clinic in the camp. So when they get sick, they can get some help if they cannot do anything for them, and they take them to this city called Cheung Kam. So they have a hospital there. People go there if they need surgery or, you know, like a more major thing, then they send them there. So this time, people live a little bit better, and they have some gardens in the camp, so they plant some gardens, and outside the camp, the Thai government give them little place that they can plant some vegetable and plant some rice, so they live a little bit better over there in the Cheung Kam camp. So this is the camp that I live in, so a little bit better.
When you learned that you were going to come to the United States, how much notice did you have to get packed and ready?
No, actually, we have like 2 days only. They just announced that in the speaker said, okay, so we get this name, and then you are going get prepared for next day, 2 days, the bus is going to come to the camp and pick you up. That's it. You don't have no time. So all you do is just pack little things, and you don't have that much to pack anyway. You just have some clothes, and that's it. And then you pack it, and then you just, and then when the bus arrives, and you get in the bus and go.
So it was you and your husband?
Yeah.
And the two children?
No, I don't have children.
You didn't have any children?
I don't have any children.
Just the two of you?
Just two of us and other people that have approved to come to this country. HR and I, we was the first, we was the third family to come to the U.S. for me and family. We're the third family in the U.S.
And did you come to Portland?
Yeah, we come straight to Portland. Was that time Calcium Chow was our sponsor. So that was one of my husband's best friend. So he sponsored us, and we come straight to Portland, and we live with them.
Yeah. And so you got off the plane?
Yeah.
And what did you think?
When I get out of the plane, that day when we get here was March 31st, 1978. It was cloudy and don't have that many rain. I mean, don't have sun, And I said, is this the way it's supposed to look like this, you know? And then HR was joking with me. He said, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to look like this. We will never have any son. So I was thinking about, really, this is it, you know? And in those days that when we was in Laos, they said that in the Americas, they have no sun. So they use the moon to dry things, you know, not the sun, you know. So I really think that we have no sun here, you know. When I get here, it was cloudy. And you know how I was when I was in the camp, so they take those Ten Commandments movie to show in the camp, you know, the Christian movie, right? And all the people that dress like that, all those clothes, you know, I really thought that when I come to the Americas, everybody is dressed like that. Nobody dresses regular. I was so scared. I look at that. I said, wow, if I go there, everybody dressed like that. How can I go? I will be so scared. When I come to this country, I was really scared. I was not prepared for anything. I was prepared people will dress like that, you know. All those heavy blanket or heavy sheets and stuff like that, you know. I didn't see, I didn't know.
That's good. I've never heard that story.
Yeah.
That's really good.
And then,
the only American movie that you ever saw before you came here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, I saw that.
You think that's how we dress.
Yeah. And but I saw a few American go to the camp and things like that, but they dress like a normal, but that's how I see it. Everybody's dressed like that, you know. So I didn't ask anybody, so.
So you looked out at the airport, and thank goodness everybody looks kind of normal.
Yeah, you know, when I get here, I look at, you know, the news person, Bill Donahue. I always thought he's a knockout gorgeous guy. I was like, wow, I didn't know that. You have a handsome guy over here too, you know.
Bill Donahue on television, you mean?
Yeah, on the Channel 6. Yeah, right? He's been in there forever, right?
Long time.
Yeah, long time. So, yeah.
So, yeah. I agree. He is a very handsome man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, they're going by now here. So, the lawnmower is going by. Okay, so, did you have any connection whatever to the war when you were there? I mean, did you see any shooting? Did you hear any shooting? You didn't have any of that.
No,
right?
We were far away. We heard some gun fighting, but it's far away. We're not close to the war.
Okay. So now we're in the United States, and tell me, if somebody said to you, if I'm a little kid...
Are we on now?
Oh.
Are we on?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
If I'm a little kid and I don't know what the word refugee means,
yeah.
How would you define that for me? What would you say a refugee was?
Well, refugee is the people that that someone come over and take over your homeland and you have no place to go. You have to escape for your life. You know, you have to go somewhere that is safe and for you to be able to survive and save for your life and your family. You have no house. You have nothing anymore. No place to live, and that's all you have to do is refugees that way. You have no home.
So do you know any new refugees in this country now?
I know there's a lot of Russian people coming, and also now they have more Hmong people. They sponsor more Hmong people coming over here.
About, new ones now?
Yeah, new one. About 16,000 altogether. They said they have about, they still have like 46,000 Hmong people still in Thailand. So since last year, they start bringing more people come over here. So they have some new Hmong refugees come to the U.S.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they just have the opening because they have in the camp in Thailand, and Thai people don't want them to live there anymore, and then Lao people don't want them to go back, so they have no place to go. So they opened that door for them to come. So I've been approved since last year, so they start coming.
But not Mian people?
Not Mian people. Yeah.
Are there still Mian people in the camps?
Yeah.
Around the camp?
Yeah, around the camp. Actually, I heard that there's two Mian people arrive in North Carolina. So two families arrive in there already. Mm-hmm. So there's two Mian new family arrive in North Carolina.
So there may be some coming.
Yeah, huh? Maybe there's some coming.
Mm-hmm. And here, when you first came, you were a refugee.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that description of you as a person, as a refugee?
I don't know anything about that. All I know is that I'm here and try to get my life to start in this. To get my life start in the U.S. Try to go to school to learn some language. When I get here, I don't know any English at all. So when I go to anywhere, when people talk, I cannot pick up any words. What I heard is there's no word broken. Just go, you know, that's all. So I have no idea. I mean, as refugee people, and then they, since we get here, they send us to school to learn some basic English.
Where did you go to school?
PCC, Los Island PCC.
And how long did you go there?
Maybe for five months, 2 hours a day.
What was that?
Two and a half hours a day. Oh, it was, it's not easy, you know, it's hard. But they're teaching us just like a kindergarten kids, you know. They basically teach you how to go to the store and buy the vegetable, what the name of the vegetable and name of, you know, stuff, you know, like things, you know, like tables and, you know, chickens and porks and carrots and stuff like that.
Did you like going to school?
Yeah. Huh?
There were other Mian women?
Yeah, there's other Mian women, there's other Hmong women and Laos women, you know, we go there as... we all go there to learn how to speak English.
So it was a way for you to connect maybe with people?
Yeah. Yeah.
And where did you live when you first came here?
I live in Halsey Square apartment. That's Northeast 66 on Halsey.
Tell us about Halsey Square. What kind of a place was that to live in those days?
Oh, you know, it's a good place. Most there's a lot of Asian people live in that area. So Vietnamese and Laos and different people, Cambodian, different people live in that area there. It's a good place to live. It's okay, you know, peaceful. And that time was not that many people, and apartment was not that expensive. So when I came here, I lived with Khao Chiam and them, that family, for maybe 9 months. And when we get, when I work and HR was working, and we get our own apartments, you know.
Now, A Choi got a job with the schools right away.
He worked in this Anzin, you know, the Japanese
Anzin.
Yeah, a grocery store. He worked there for a while, and then when the more people come in, then the kid go to school, and then they have no English knowledge. So A Choi knows English, so he worked for the as a teacher aid or interpreter or something in the school district.
Where did he learn English?
He learned that while he was in Laos, he went to college in Thailand, Udon. So that's why he went there for either 9 months or a year to go to there, and then he learned English from there.
I remember that he was the most articulate, well-spoken of all the people, of all the bilinguals at the... with Portland Public Schools at the time.
Yeah.
If we really wanted to be understood and make sure that they understood us, we always called him.
Okay.
Because his English was very, very good.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, it still is, but I mean,
yeah.
Early on,
uh-huh.
It was very good.
Yeah.
So you were here in 78?
Yeah.
So that's when I first started teaching.
Yeah.
ESL.
So at that time, when I come here, you know, I'm over age already, so I couldn't go to high school anymore. So I go to... ESL and community, you know, college, and then learn my English. Then later on, I got a job.
You got a job, okay. Yeah. So at first you were just at home?
Yeah, I just go to school. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And who else was with you at your house, with you and A. Choi?
The first 9 months we lived with Kao Chiam and them. So with Kao Chiam and his three kids and with his mom. Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Been hard.
Yeah, so after I got a job and HR worked for a while, then we can afford to move out and get our own apartment, two-bedroom apartment.
And what was your first job?
I worked, still my first job today. I mean, I've been there, I work for Tektronix. I've been there since 1978, so 20-something years now.
And what do you do for them?
Assembly. Yeah, we build the oscilloscope assembly.
And do you like the job?
Mm-hmm.
You like the people you're with?
Yeah.
Tell me about the job. What's it like?
Oh, you know, when the first time I came here, you know, I don't know English at all. But when I applied for a job, and they hire me right away because they like my attitude. So anything I do, you know. But anyway, I even though I don't know English that well, don't know how to read that well, but I learned really quick. So when they teach me how to do things and I can work on my hands, you know, do things really, I mean, easy. So people are nice, you know. I pick up that pretty quick and fast, you know. So I'm doing that. And I really enjoy it. I work with nice people and they treat you well. And ever since that, it's my first job. So I've been there since then.
Are there a lot of other refugee people there who work there with you?
Yeah, uh-huh. That's a whole bunch. They hire a lot of Asians, Vietnamese and Cambodians, Laos and Hmong and Mien. You know, most people, a lot.
So you feel very much at home there, you must.
Actually, the area I work, there's no one speak my language.
Oh.
I want to speak is English because no Mien people work in the same area as I do. So no way, I don't feel at home at all. I don't know anybody. There's a big company, so everybody work in different area. So I hardly see any Mien people that work in the same area as I do.
And so when was your first child born?
1981, December. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was that like?
Actually, my both daughter I adopted. So I never had my own kid, yeah.
And they, how did you get them? How did they come to your life?
Oh, I have a friend that live in Seattle, you know, and then she has four or five kids already. So, and when she was pregnant, she wanted to give this baby away. And I have some girlfriend that went to Seattle to visit somebody, and she heard somebody tell them that this a lady want to give the baby away. So, and I find out the phone number, and I call them, and then I tell them that I don't have a kid, if they want to give away, and I really like to adopt the baby. So then later on, I give them my phone number. Later on, they decide, say, okay, so we want to give to you. Okay, so we start doing paperwork, and when the baby born, we went to bring the baby home.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. So,
and you did it twice.
Yeah, I did it twice. And my younger daughter is actually my sister-in-law's kid, my HR's older sister's daughter. So it came in surprise, you know. And like my daughter's, when she was pregnant, the whole time I take her to a doctor every single day, every week. Like she have to go check up. I take her every week. She didn't tell me a thing that she wanted to give baby away to me. I didn't know that, so I take her all the time. Okay, so when the day that she go for labor, and on Saturday I was not home. I was working, and she called me up to take her to a doctor. I was not home, so my husband David take her to a doctor. And on the way there, on the way to the hospital, she said, "Tell HR, you know, here I am going. Doesn't matter a girl or boy. When this baby born, I'm going to give it to you." And then it was shock to him and to me. And we was grateful that she wanted to give baby to us. And later on, the baby was born, and it's a girl. It's 8 pounds and 7 ounces. The big baby. So, and then But I was at work, and he called me up and told me the baby was born, and it's a girl. And I was so anxious to come home from work.
I guess.
Yeah.
Then did you stay home for a couple of weeks with the baby?
No, I didn't. I just stayed maybe a week only. Yeah, stay home with a week only, stay home with the baby. And I had my mother, that time my mother-in-law was living with me, you know, and then she taking care of my daughter, and I was still can go to work. She was a good baby. She doesn't cry at all. So I was still going to work, you know.
Now, do your girls have contact with their biological mother at all?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah, I have mom. When they both graduate, and then both their natural parents come. So they come celebrate with us. Yeah.
What a wonderful story.
Yeah, it is. It's in Mian community, for Mian people, we always have open adoption. We don't hide from the kids that you adopted, and we don't know your parents. We usually see each other all the time, you know, still have a close relationship with them, you know, anything. We all come by together, take care of them, and, you know, take care of each other. We don't have anything like that. You don't tell them anything like that, you know.
That's a wonderful thing about Mian culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Tell me some other things about Mian culture that you think have helped you get along better in this country than maybe you would have.
Yeah. In the Mian community, we all really close. We don't have that many people, but we all really close. We helping each other. Like someone's losing family member, we all, the whole community come by, and they all pitch in the money to give the donation to this family to help them, you know, so to help them with the funeral expense and all that, you know, they buy them food to bring them, you know, a lot of things and to help them for their grief and all. So it's just really strong community. That's how to help our community to stay strong, because we are close and we helping each other.
Tell me about your New Year celebration.
Yeah, New Year celebration, usually we all getting together from people from Seattle, California, come by, and we all celebrate together and to this New Year.
What do you do?
We just have cultural performance and you know, live music. People can dance together and visit each other. They haven't seen each other for a long time. Just like events, you know, so people can come by and to celebrate and also to visit each other.
Is it also a way to make sure that your children stay connected to the Mian culture?
Mm-hmm.
They won't forget?
Yeah, it is. So that children can see what's going on, and hopefully they can carry that culture to the generation to generation. But today, I am worried about the younger generation now. They have too many things to learn and about American culture. And I'm afraid that the culture is threatening away, you know, like it's going away. As I'm afraid that in the future, maybe the children doesn't know where they come from and what their ancestors are and what kind of, you know, background they're coming from.
Why do you think that's important?
I think it's important to know that it's what it, your values are, and what your ancestor and what you're from, and not to forget about that. It's important for them to carry that on, so they can tell the, you know, the children, you know, great children and the children after children, and have the books around, and, you know, so they can don't forget, you know, and then where you're from.
I agree, it's really important. My daughter's from the Native American community,
yeah,
and that's another place where kids are moving more and more away.
Yeah.
From the culture, and the tribes are trying very hard to keep,
yeah,
them connected, but there's so much out here to keep them distracted.
Kind, yeah,
of from that. Have you gone back to Thailand at all to see family there?
No, actually, since I come here 1978, I have never been back.
Do you want to go back?
Yeah, some days. When HY was going back, but that time my kids still young, and my mother-in-law home, so I don't want to leave them alone, stay home with them. So he went back many times already, but I still haven't go back.
Do you have family still in Thailand?
Not close family in Laos, not close family, but relatives. I still have a lot of relatives in Laos, but not that close.
What do you think, what do you hear Laos is like now for the people who are there?
I think they're okay, you know, it's not too bad now, it's getting better. But people are still poor and they just don't have enough money to go like buy medicine, you know, in case if they sick and stuff like that. So it's hard for them to get medication and stuff like that.
You know, Tu Maxavan?
Yeah, Tu Maxavan. Yeah. She's one of the really good friends to me. She was my teacher in Mahut Community College that time.
What kind of teacher was she?
She was an English teacher. Yeah.
And you liked her as a teacher?
Yeah, and I liked her as a friend. She's been really nice.
Yeah. She was talking about going back to Laos, you know.
Yeah.
If you could go back to Laos, would you go back there to live? And she said there's nobody left there.
Oh.
Everybody's gone.
So. Oh.
But she also talked about her father becoming very ill in Laos.
Yeah.
And they were doing okay, but they needed medical care for him.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get it, and so they brought them to Thailand.
Oh, you know,
they escaped Thailand.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So he could go to doctor. They didn't want to leave Laos at all.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you would rather have stayed there too.
Yeah.
But anyway, he did survive because they got him to Thailand and he got some medical care.
Okay.
So it sounds like not much medical care in Laos.
Yeah, not much medical care in Laos. Yeah, that's true. Only in Thailand. So the thing is, maybe someday when I retire, I might want to go live in Thailand for a while. Maybe I vacation home or something. But I don't want to live there because it's too far away from hospital, you know.
In Laos, you mean?
Yeah, in Laos. In Laos. Also, maybe in Thailand, too. Maybe, you know, they might have it, but I don't know, but I don't know. I just think I like the life over here, you know. I do pretty much what I want and go places and things like that. And if you want to live good life, if you have a house back in Laos, I think it's nice. Or in Thailand, especially, I think in Thailand it's nice because if you have good retirement home, you go there, you live like a king, you know. You have maid, you have servants, you know, to serve you and all that. But over here, not barely survive.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to go back and live over there. I like it over here.
You would?
Yeah, I would. I'm happy here.
Now, you taught girls how to do the Mian dances.
Yeah.
Would you tell me how you got into that and when was that and how long did you do it and do you still do it?
Oh, no, I'm not doing that anymore. Actually, I don't teach them to do it. Someone else trained them how to do it. I just bring the girls over there. I just involve, you know, like they need transportation and stuff like that. So I take the girl, I take all the young girls over there to the place and did it.
What place?
You know, like someone else home, you know, they have some, the girls pretty much taught themselves how to dance, you know, not the old people. So they look at it and they want to do it and they just follow the music and learn how to do that. So I did that for 2 years, you know. But after that, it's now someone else too.
Here comes the lawnmower again. You want to rest your hand? Okay. Maybe turn off a little bit?
It's okay.
It's
okay. It probably won't take very long.
That thing can digital or not? I mean,
this is digital, yeah. It takes in quite a bit. It does about an hour.
Okay.
And let's see, where are we? We're in pretty good shape, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, Guy, can't you go a little bit faster than that? Oh, he's going back and forth now. But he's way over the other side, so it's better. Gee, he's that far away.
When you first came here, you were poor?
Yeah.
How did you manage?
I was living with my sponsor, So they pay everything. So we get some food stamps, you know, for a month or so. And then each one get a job. So we didn't get anything anymore.
So you felt like his paycheck was enough to live on and you weren't hurting for money?
No, because that time the apartment was only $100-some a month. And then Kachim was working full-time, and his wife was not work, but later on his wife was working, and HY was working, and later on I was working, so, yeah.
So Kachim was really a good friend.
Really good friends, yeah.
I think that someone is going to interview him. It's not me, but somebody else is,
Kachim and his wife, Chua, they are really, really... good friends and sponsor, and then good community leader. Because them, that's why a lot of people follow them. They're the one that they're not afraid to come here. They're the one to come here first. But a lot of people tell them that they have had been eating by American people already, so no one alive.
Say again?
They were telling us a story about the culture of them come here and it was get eaten by the cannibal.
There were cannibals in America?
Yeah.
They would eat you?
No, they said Kachim's mother was they eat by cannibal already, also his wife too. So they did afraid people said kind of story tell us not to come to this country because the Kachim was not afraid. He came here in 1976. So it was... he was get eating already, so no one alive anymore. So
no wonder you were afraid to come here.
Exactly.
You were worried a cannibal was going to get you.
Yeah.
I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah, so, but and that later on, when Kachim right at the back and tell us that he's still alive and he will be our sponsor, so we come here, you know, and later on, everybody come, you know. We still talk about that story today.
The cannibals?
Yeah, the cannibals, you know. Yeah. So,
with that story.
Yeah, he was a good leader. He was not afraid, so he came here first, okay? So that's why he bring all these people come along, follow him. So really good friends and really good community leader.
Tell me about your mom. When's the last time you saw her?
I saw her 1998 when she was... I went there to visit her in France, but the last time I saw her that she... I have to bury her last year, 2004, January 26th, and she passed away, so I went there. That's all.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Was she sick for a long time?
Yeah, I mean...
Okay. Of all times, huh?